Greetings. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source, a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers, and you are welcome to call in and ask questions and make comments during the show. This is a toll-free number that does work for anyone in the world. Please ring 877-876-5227. Again, that is 877-876-5227. You can also help support the program by making a donation or sponsoring a show, and we will do a nice little commercial for you. For more information about that, please visit towardthelight.org. This week we've got a very special guest, and we've always got special guests, needless to say, but this is a very special friend, and she is a fellow near-death experiencer. She is an author who's got a tremendous story to tell about how she came to write her book, and she is also a musician. Let us welcome Peg Abernathy. Hello, Peg.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Thank you for having me.
It is such a pleasure to have you with us.
And likewise.
I was quite intrigued when I was reading a little bit about your information.
Mm-hmm.
On, first of all, let's get into the fact that you are a near-death experiencer.
Yes, I am.
And would you like to tell us a little bit about your NDE, and then we're going to ask what led to the profound writing that you have done. So go ahead and start by telling us a little bit about your NDE, because people always appreciate hearing these wonderful testimonies.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say that at the time, I didn't know what was going on. This was quite a few years ago. And what I was doing, I was a performer and I was on stage. And the band, I was getting ready to introduce the band. And I started to feel funny in my midsection. I had always had monthly, you know, trouble and whatnot. And I thought, uh-oh, here we go again. You know, it was another month of this pain that I always had. Well, all of a sudden, I began to introduce the band, and as I did, I felt a literal explosion in my midsection. And it completely paralyzed me and just doubled me over. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. It was just, the pain was just unbelievable. And there I was up on stage, and anyway, the guys helped me off the stage, and immediately I was taken to the hospital. And by the time I got to the hospital, I was clawing at the window. I was just in so much pain, I didn't think that, you know, there was that kind of pain was, you know, possible in the human body, just when you think it can't get any worse.
Yes. Now, when did this happen, Peg? What year?
You know what? It was in the early 1980s.
Okay, okay.
But like I say in my book, the near-death experience I'm about to describe was just the beginning of my miracle story. So it was just the catalyst that really started everything. Anyway, what happened, making quite a long story short on the medical aspect of it, I was trying to be examined by doctors. I was crying and screaming, and nobody could touch me. I wouldn't let them touch me. It was just one of those things. They began to get aggravated with me and said, if you won't let us examine you, we can't help you. And I didn't know what I was doing. I guess I was thrashing around. And at that point, everybody left the room. The doctor actually got angry with me and said, well, if you're not going to, you know, let me help you, I'm leaving. And he left. So I'm lying there thinking, oh, this is great. And I kept staring at the clock on the wall and wondering what was going on. And all of a sudden, the thought of death went through my mind. And I had never thought of death before. I was very, very, very young. And just, this isn't something I thought about. And immediately when I felt this sensation of death, imminent death, I began to fight it. And I guess I kicked into self-survival mode. At the time, I was a very staunch Catholic, and I began to say all the mantras and prayers that, you know, Catholicism brings, and I just kept fighting it. I just kicked into this survival mode, and it kept coming up, and I kept fighting against this death thought that I had.
Were you afraid?
I was. I was afraid, but it was more of, I just have to live.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just a fight or flight response. There really wasn't a lot of mental thinking going on. It was just fighting it, moving and fighting it and trying to fight this feeling.
And that's indeed the human nature to instinctively want to go into the survival. We've got to survive the body.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, as I kept fighting it, all of a sudden the thought came again. And I always tell people this, and you being an experiencer, you probably know that, at least for me anyway, there is a point where you go from self-survival to acceptance. And it's almost like a line, really, you know, where all of a sudden I went, okay, like that, all right. And my first thought was like, this, is this the way I'm going? And then it was just acceptance. And the minute that I agreed in my heart and in my mind that I was going to accept this death, all of a sudden I heard a buzzing and a ringing and a vibrating sound I felt on my body. And I began to hear noises in the room. People began rushing back into the room. And I remember people touching me. But I remember smiling because the last thing, that was the last physical sensation I had was my smile, because I felt this great sense of going home. Now, I must digress here just say that I was very staunch Catholic, and when I was in the conscious state, I was thinking I would go to purgatory, because that's what, you know, I was taught, and I would go through all these certain things, you know, that I was taught.
And purgatory, to clarify, is a state of limbo, correct?
It is, yes. It's a place where you go to pay for your sins.
Which
in my way of thinking, it's like right now, we're doing that right now. But
yes.
At any rate, this is what I thought. But you know, the minute that I felt myself released, I just had this ache to go home. And basically, I found myself at the top of the room at the ceiling. And I remember consciously thinking, uh-oh, the body's back there, and I don't want to go back to the body, and I don't want to look at that body. I just wanted to leave the body alone, and I kept wanting to go towards something that I felt was calling me. Now, again, at this time, I didn't know anything about spirituality other than what I was taught in Catholicism. I'd never heard of a tunnel, a light, near-death experiences, nothing. I'd never even heard of it. And so I had no idea what was happening, but I had a very, you know, perfunctory, as they would say, near-death experience where I basically started to go towards a tunnel, and basically I was floating over treetops, and I described them as if you would take a negative on a photograph. It'd be like a negative treetop.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and I remember there were entities waving at me and egging me on. And the only one I recognized was my grandmother, who was my mother's mother. I recognized her. But again, I was very young, and really nobody that I knew had passed on yet in my life. I hadn't experienced, you know, death.
And when you say young, do you mean in your 20s?
Yes,
or?
Very early 20s.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I went through the tunnel. I started going through this tunnel faster and faster towards this pinpoint light at the end of the tunnel. And I knew I had to get to the light, and why I didn't know, but I just needed it. I had to have it. And I felt myself going faster and faster through the tunnel. And then I burst forth into the light. And it reminds me of being born. When you're first born, you know how your senses are. You know, you get the cold and the hot sensations and the lights and the noise, and you're on overload of the human experience.
It's so interesting that you say that, because I've even written this in articles about NDEs and related topics, that a lot of these fundamentalist Christians will claim to be born again.
Mm-hmm.
But my understanding of what it really is to be born again is what we've been through, because it is so true that when we cross over and then reemerge into this plane, we are literally born again.
transformed.
We are completely changed and transformed as a result of that experience. So I would have to say that what you're describing here is so accurate. Indeed, you were born again.
And I do believe that, I've often said this, that I feel the life I'm living right now is almost a dream. And that when I awaken, I'll be on the other side.
Exactly.
Or I'm in the womb right now, and I will be born, you know, when I make my transition. But it was the most loving, peaceful, wonderful, unbelievable, incredible sensation. And it you cannot describe it, as you know, in human words. You just can't. And the feeling of this peace and love and this light, this lighted sensation. And I was just infused with love. And that's the way I describe it. At that point, I began to see what I characterize as a movie, but it was basically my life,
Yes. This
lifetime.
Yes.
And it was just all the highlights of my life and some of the ones that weren't highlighted, but just throughout my life. And again, I was very young, and I had just gotten married, and I came up to the point where I was getting married, and I saw my husband's face in the church, and something struck me and went, wait a minute, kind of like that. It was like, forgot about him. You know, I think we're not done yet. And the minute I thought, I thought to myself, I had an yearning or an ache for him, and I heard a voice say to me, not now, my daughter. Which, of course, immediately I thought, who said that? And is that God? Is that an angel? Is that a saint? And who or what was that? And it wasn't a voice that I knew, but it was slightly familiar. And the minute I kind of agreed with this voice that, you know, it's not my time, I have to go back to my husband, we're not done yet, and I have work to do. And the minute I agreed to do that, then I immediately found myself swirling back in the light and through the tunnel, over the negative treetop, and then I felt myself slam back down into my body that was very cold and dense, and then I took a gasp for air, and I remember my arm shooting straight up, and I could feel my body again, and I could feel the sensations of being in a body again. And then I heard everybody around me I could tell the tension in the room kind of subsided, and everybody kind of took a breath, and basically that was it. I heard right before I went out, I passed out, I guess, but maybe they gave me something at this point. I heard somebody say, I can't believe that kid almost died. And that's the actual NDE story.
That's very powerful. And again, I note that no matter what, the prevailing message is that of experiencing great, unconditional, all-encompassing love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, something that I want to pose to you, especially the fact that you were Catholic and all of that, when you went through the life review, did you experience someone judging you, or did you experience you judging yourself?
There was no judgment. It was completely and totally an observation. So there was nothing, I didn't say, oh, that was a good thing I did, or oh, that was a bad thing. And basically, I wasn't in the actual review, I was watching it.
Exactly, I went through that too, like
Right. Watching
a film.
Exactly, like watching a movie. And there was no judgment. And since then, working, you know, in my own meditation with my guides, I understand how judgment is such a waste. You know, and that is something that I've worked on for many years to eliminate from my vocabulary.
Good, good.
Absolutely. But at that moment, I know that there are some experiencers who experience sadness or remorse or whatever, but I think it also might have been due to the fact that I was so young and didn't have a lot of life experience at that time. I really didn't have much experience to feel bad about, at that point.
Well, a lot of people, including myself, you know, we experience the self-judgment,
mm-hmm.
you know. But having said that, I remember feeling very much detached, not being emotionally charged, as it were. You know, when we're looking at things from a completely different perspective, obviously, and you know, I could just be very detached and very objective and just, yeah, all right, well, I think I would like to improve this, tweak that a little bit and continue on and we'll be all right. But no matter what, during the life review, experiencing that love enveloping me and no he god sitting on a throne saying, all right, you blew it, down you go. None of that. None of that. It's all bullocks, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really nice to compare notes with other experiences and just see how, no matter what, the love is the prevailing experience.
Right. The unconditional love. And I know that through meditation, it has come through for me so many times that the saddest legacy of mankind is that we define everything. And that's where this judgment begins. It begins with defining everything around us. Then what do? We define something, then we attach an emotion to it. And then when we attach an emotion to it, we ultimately judge it.
Yes.
And by doing that, the ultimate sadness is that we limit it. We limit that, whatever it is we're judging, and ourselves, and the life experience. So we're missing out on so many levels when we don't tap into that unconditional source.
And ideally, as people hear more and more about these wonderful experiences, they'll be able to go, aha, you know, we don't need to do this. We need to allow our minds to be open and reclaim the innocence that we have when we first enter into this place.
Right, exactly. Children are, if we can just remember that, I would say this also, that to believe and remember a time when we were accepting of all new things, instead of judging whatever it is, allowing it to be what it is, and you don't even have to make a judgment or have an opinion on something, you can actually step back and go, now isn't that interesting?
And that's exactly what I did, too, when I came back from my huge NDE. I was like a baby, and I would look at stuff and really have no idea what it was and do just that. This is interesting, or wow, or just be in a total state of awe.
Of awe, exactly. And the children that do that, they're always touching things and feeling them and throwing them. That's why they do that, because it's new.
Yes.
When they see an apple for the first time, they're going to run and grab it and touch it and bite it and do whatever it is to experience that. And I think that is so joyful. And so many times as adults, we forget that innocence, and it's very sad.
It really is sad. And gratefully for the near-death experiences and the out-of-body experiences, I'm still being able to maintain a childlike quality. And in some ways, I'm more childlike now than I was when I was a child.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Again, PMH Atwater and a number of people point out that child in the ears, which I was too, they tend to grow up very quickly and be more mature and very deep. And then grown-ups or adult NDEs will experience a reversal of the biological clock,
right.
And then become more childlike, become more open-minded and innocent and playful and spontaneous.
And trusting.
Oh, very much so.
And unquestioning. And I also have I think I can bottle this and become a multimillionaire, because I think I have the fountain of youth. It's that attitude with deep meditation. It turns back the biological clock. Because I look very young for my age, and nobody would ever guess my age, and they always gasp and they go, what, are you kidding me? And how do you do? What do you do? What cream do you use? You
know?
And
yeah.
It's meditation. I think, because I deeply meditate several hours a day, and I believe that for every minute I meditate, that I gain a minute.
Well, that's so valid. That is so
valid. I believe that.
Valid, absolutely.
But it, you know, the other thing is, when I came back from my NDE and I woke up in my room, I began to see fuzzy colors around people's bodies. And at this point, I went into kind of a panic. Well, I definitely panicked. I was crying and saying, I'm going blind. I can't see because everybody's glowing. I kept saying, everybody's glowing. And they tested my eyes, and they thought maybe it was the lack of oxygen, whatever it was. But they couldn't find anything wrong. And as the days wore on, people came into focus, and so did these colors around the body. Now, I didn't understand. I didn't know what it was and never heard of it. Didn't know what an NDE was. So again, I'm standing there going, what? with both of these phenomena, because I really had never heard or experienced, obviously, any of that. And ended up, believe it or not, going to see a Catholic priest a few months later, because I needed somebody to explain what had happened in the, I kept calling it the tunnel. And even though I only shared it with a couple of people, I needed to ask him what that was, and also these color things. And you're not going to believe what happened. I mean, I went in there and I thought, okay, I'm going to give them a fake name, so in case they want to excommunicate me, my story. I was such a staunch Catholic. And I thought, okay, Ann Smith, I tell them my name, but not thinking that was a lie. But anyway, they put me in the rectory, and this incredible priest, I said, I want to speak with the priest who gave Mass last week. And I didn't know his name, and in walks this priest, and he said, I'm sorry, I'm, you know, so casual, I've been working in the garden. And before he had a chance to sit down, I blurted out this whole tunnel thing. At that point, I was telling him, oh, I went down this tunnel and the light and all this, and now people are glowing. They've got colors all around their body, and I don't know what's going on. And I basically looked at him to give me some direction, because I had nothing to go on. And he sighed, and he sat down, and he said, he looked at me, and I thought, okay, here we go. He's going to give me Hail Marys and penance, and, you know, go to confession. I really believed that he was going to make it all just go away or explain it away for me. Well, he said, you've been given a gift, and you must learn about this gift, and you need to explore it. And he reached up, and he grabbed Raymond Moody's book, which had just been released, Life After Life.
That's him.
I'm not kidding you. Hands me this book and says, this is a book about people like you. You should read it and learn more, you know, about what happened. And I'm looking at him like, what? And then he said, oh, and those colors around people's bodies, that's called the human aura. It's the electromagnetic field around the body. And there are books on that phenomenon as well. Now, at this point, I just stared at him and went, you got to be kidding me. I'm thinking, my mind is racing. I had never heard of any of this before. He pretty much blasted my foundation. But he gave me the spiritual wings that I needed to fly on my own and find out what in the world had happened in the tunnel, what it was, and what these colors were all about. And I always laugh, and I tell people when I was leaving, he looked at me and he said, so, what does my aura look like? And I said, fine. I mean, I didn't know. I said, fine. And I left. But basically, I had this beautiful foundation of a wonderful, for me at the time, religion from which to fly. And he gave me my wings. And he, actually, I was just back in Virginia Beach speaking at the IONS back there. So yes. I'm sure you've probably been there. And an ex-Catholic priest came up to me. He was a monk. And he heard me speak and heard my story and just different anecdotes and whatnot from my teachings. And he came up and he talked to me about this, and he told me his background. I thought, wow, you know, it's just ironic. It's just ironic how everything comes to
this. Now, I want to interject something here, mm-hmm. if you don't mind, because you were mentioning the book Life After Life,
mm-hmm.
and I have actually got the video, Life After Life, that was produced by Peter Schalke, who was on my radio show recently, and he is here in Nashville, Tennessee. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. And after several, you know, people had been turned away by Dr. Raymond Moody,
mm-hmm.
he said yes to Peter Schalke. And I have actually got that video available for sale.
Your kid, is it a movie from the book?
Yes.
Or is it a documentary?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my.
Life After Life.
Wow.
And you can find that on my website,
okay.
towardthelight.org, in the books section.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I've got that for sale. It is brilliant.
Wow, I would love to see that. Does it have Dr. Moody in it?
Oh, yes, it does.
Wow.
Yes, Peter is interviewing Dr. Moody. Oh, it's beautiful. And it starts off where, actually, Peter's writing a letter to his father who's dying. And it just goes into this whole beautiful process. And then he's interviewing Raymond Moody. And then he also interviews if my memory serves me correctly, 5 different NDEs.
Wow. When was this made?
Oh, let's see.
You know?
Having a senior moment here. It was... I believe it was in the 1990s, early 90s.
Wow.
That we'll have to go back and listen to the radio show because Peter did talk about that, but I admit I'm very horrible with remembering dates and years.
Who am I?
All of that stuff. But.
Well, he started the whole understanding process of this and mainstreaming, as you know, near-death experiences. He wrote the first book about it. People like me never talked about it or just shared it with a few people or poo-pooed it or whatever, and he brought it into the mainstream. And there are a lot of people doing wonderful work. Dr. Morse doing children in NDE.
Melvin Morse,
yes. I actually got an email from him, and he was telling me a little bit about some stuff, and he's doing fantastic work. I sure would I'd love to meet him. I've never met him in person. But with children, you know, they don't make this stuff up.
Oh, no, they don't.
And they are so detailed and so positive. Oh, yes, I did this and I did that. And just a matter of fact, it's that old accepting what we don't, you know, just something new, just believing in whatever it was because it's real. And he's doing wonderful work. And a lot of people are doing great work on this.
And PMH Atwater has done tremendous work with children.
Right.
She's interviewed, close to 300 child NDEers.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks about all of their experiences in the new children and the near-death experience. Dr. Peter Finnick in England has also done a lot of work with children.
Right, I've heard of him. Now, you know, she talks, a lot of people are talking about these new children, the crystal children, indigo children. Well, about 10 years ago, I started noticing, because I do see the aura, and I see it all the time. I can turn it off. But I began documenting, and not by turning it off, I mean I can kind of overlook it. It's not like it's blasting me everywhere I go.
I go through the same thing because I've been seeing auras since, forever, really.
Yeah. Was it triggered by your NDE?
You know, that's a good question because I had them as children, and I've always been a mystic and a seer. And so, you know, I can't really tell when the beginning of all of this was. It's just always been natural to me.
See,
and
for me, it has
feel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can feel the energies coming off of people. And that is typical of NDEs, too. You know, all of this stuff, even if you've already got these faculties, they will be enhanced as a result of having NDEs. And you're literally rewired, you know, by having these experiences.
I believe that. I definitely believe something is opened. I always say a spirit portal was opened because I had never experienced that before. I didn't know what it was. Scared me to death. But I started documenting different aura patterns years ago. But when I started seeing these children coming in with these, I always called them star babies because their aura is clear and it's sparkly like the 4th of July sparkler sort of.
Well, you can, for our global, you're going to have to explain what 4th of July is.
Oh, for the Independence Day in America, we do fireworks, and we have these little fireworks that you hold in your hand, and you light them, and they sparkle. They sparkle and make all kinds of sparkles and little fires. I guess that's the best way I can describe it.
Oh, those are beautiful. Okay, yes.
Yes, they're very beautiful. And I know you know what they are, but that's the best explanation I can give. I'm not really sure how they work. But that's what it looks like, and I started documenting it. I can tell when somebody's pregnant. I can tell when somebody's depressed or when they're lying. I can tell. And it's just different things that I've been documenting over the years. It hasn't been a real big part of my work. It's just because I know that the aura is simply an extension of the human body. It's just the electromagnetic field.
Exactly.
And it's really not this big woo-woo-woo thing. It's basically, it's your body, and we all experience it when we touch something and we get a shock.
Or so much bigger than our bodies, and
uh-huh.
That's what I keep sharing with people. Our bodies are just the teeniest part of what constitutes our being.
Oh, absolutely. It's just a carriage unit for this magnificent light beacon.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, what does the aura look like to you when you see someone who is pregnant?
There is a small lighted I don't want to use the word orb because I don't want to give that illusion, but it is a roundish glow that attaches itself to the left side of the top of the head of the mother.
And I've yes, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've actually told about four different girlfriends that they were pregnant before they knew, and they're like, what? Oh, my goodness. But I didn't know what it was. And but then when I started putting two and two together, again, this was so new to me. I just had to do my own documentation. But the actual thing with the tunnel experience, that was really the focus of my work and what had happened, who had talked to me, where I went, and all that. That became the focus of my work. And the aura, once I realized that everybody's aura is pretty much the same and it's just affected by your emotions or your health, and if you're angry, it shoots up. If you're lying, it shoots up into a spike, and just different things. I kind of realized that that isn't my work, my life's work, you know. It was just something that I'm able to see since my NDE. But then I went in the other direction.
Oh, so what I'd like to ask you about now, I'm really inspired by how your book came about, and if you'd like to share the title of it and how it came into being. It's really quite special, I think.
Thank you. It's called The Self Full Life, and a true story that will help your soul remember. And basically, about 4 years ago, I decided to quit my cushy job, and although it was a very difficult job, but it had everything I needed, the health care benefits and everything else. And I decided to write this miracle that is the story that has been unfolding over the last few years, several years, and put it down to, you know, in book form and get it out there. And it basically starts the night of my death and moves on into my meditation practice and the introduction of my spirit guides and everything that happened that's amazing. Is that what you meant, the actual...
But you actually... And this went into a trance or a channeling there?
Yes, yes. Well, let me go back just a second here and tell you that I knew something had happened, but I was still very nervous. I knew something of a spiritual nature had happened in the tunnel, but I went to the priest. He pretty much gave me my wings to fly on my own. But I being so clustered into an organized doctrine, I didn't really know where to go, and I got very, very nervous. I didn't know anybody like me, and nobody talked about it, and I wanted God, and I craved the source, but I didn't know where to go. And basically, it was suggested to me to go and see a shiatsu massage therapist, and that is a masseuse who does specialized deep pressure massage to help release some of the tension and just basically relax. So I did, and after I did the session with Celeste, I sat up and I told her my story about the tunnel and the light and everything. And she said, would you like to go back there again? And what? Sure. You know, at this point, I was finally relaxed, you know. I said, okay. And so she said, lay back down. And she began a guided imagery session on me. Well, what happened is that she began to describe a beautiful lake, and you're by a lake, and very typical scenario. All of a sudden, I couldn't hear her anymore, and I found my essence, myself, standing in front of a lake. I felt like a popping sensation, and I was on in another realm. Now, at this point, I'm thinking, oh, this is great. Here, now I'm going crazy. I'm imagining this incredible place, and I didn't know what was going on. Bottom line is that I kind of swooshed my foot in the water, and pretty much that's about it. I just looked around and thought, where is this place? And before I knew it, I heard her calling me back. And she told me, she said, boy, you should have seen what you looked like. She said, how long do you think you were gone? I said, about 3 or 5 minutes, 3 minutes or 5 minutes. And she said, no, you were on 2 hours.
Whoa!
Yeah, and I said, what? And so, but basically, this wonderful, beautiful angel, Celeste, told me that I could go back, I could go in, you know, to the other side, that I had this gift and blah, blah, blah. I know we don't have all night for me to explain my story here, but basically, she said to learn to meditate, and she told me the techniques to meditate. And I ran home, and I basically laid down, and I found myself popping again into this other realm every time I go into this deep meditation. And I'd be at this beautiful lake and this incredible thing. And this went on for 2 years. Every day I would go there and I'd lay it on the beach. And I was being comfortably introduced to this beautiful place. And I didn't know where I was. I knew, I wasn't sure what it was. I thought, I'm dreaming or I'm imagining this. But this is great, so I'm going to keep doing it. So one day I came out of the water and I looked through the forest, which is on one side of the water, and I saw this glowing light. Followed the light, broke through a clearing, and there was a beautiful stone temple with a man halfway up the temple beckoning me up the side of the steps. Now, at this point, this is the first time I started to fear for myself mentally. I thought, okay, I'm schizophrenic. I'm seeing people now. I'm going to start talking to people in my head. Is this what this is? I mean, I really did, because, again, I didn't know what was going on.
But so you really weren't aware of other dimensions of existence?
Nothing. Nothing.
Okay.
I mean, this was, you talk about just accepting what happened and not questioning. That was me, a big fat question mark on my forehead. I just went with it. And basically, this I went. I would go halfway up, and he would never talk to me. He would sit me down, and but never communicate with me. Finally, after about 6 months, he communicated to me that I needed to go the rest of the way up the temple, and to go in to meet my guides. And which I did. I'm going through this so fast, but bottom line, this is such an amazing moment in my life. I can't even tell you. But I went in, and there was this beautiful event that happened that I'm not going to get into. But I was introduced to my spirit guides, and there were six of them at the time. They all introduced themselves to me, and the middle one came towards me, and I recognized his voice as the one that said, "Not now, my daughter." He said, "This is where you came in your moment of crisis," and so on and so forth. Now, I have to say, I know there's not a lot of time, and I do want to say one thing. I have to get this in, and we're just touching on this miracle, but at this point, again, when I would come out of meditation, I began to doubt, thinking, I'm imagining this. I don't know what's going on. Am I going crazy? All the things that a normal person would feel. But every time I was over there on the other side working with them, they were my teachers, and they would sit me down and teach me.
And you also experienced a consistency.
Every time. There's never any of this, "Well, they're not coming through today." This one is talking in riddles. No, it was like you and I speaking. It was so crystal clear, and still is to this day. Well, one day I went in, and I have a doctor guy who helped me take care of my physical body, the vehicle, he called it. And he said, "You have a crisis going on in your body. You must get to an embodied physician for a diagnosis of diabetes." And I went,
"Oh,
what?
Wow.
Diabetes?" And I wasn't having symptoms or anything at the time. And he told me about it. He told me, I kept going back, and every time he would say, "You must go, you're in crisis, and you're going to ruin the cellular," I can't remember his words exactly, but they're in the book, "but the cellular mechanism of your body, and you must go." Finally, I decided to go to my gynecologist, because I thought, okay, I'll just go to my OBGYN, whatever. And didn't know anything, and went in there and asked him to test me for diabetes. And at this point, I was more afraid of being tested for diabetes and not having it, and thinking, and then finding out the guides were not real, than having diabetes.
Yeah.
I did not want to lose this jewel in my life. So basically, he said, "Well, why do you want me to test you for diabetes?" And I said, "Well..." By that time, I began to have symptoms. Now, we're talking about type 1 diabetes, not type 2. And so anyway, they tested me, and sure enough, I had 758 blood sugars, which is extremely high. If anybody
knows,
yeah, it was about diabetes, that's where I was. And I remember, and my husband and I were sitting in the doctor's office, and he said to me, you have diabetes. And I said, "Okay, well, what do I have to do?" Because I already knew I had it, because the guides had been telling me I had it. And he said to me, you don't act like somebody who's just been diagnosed with diabetes." And I didn't want to tell him that he wasn't the first doctor that told me this. But basically for me, that was the amazing miracle that validated them for me. And I never questioned from there on out. Because since then, when I came back, when I popped over to the other side, it was like, they didn't say, told you so, none of that. It was just, welcome, we're so glad you understand. And then let's move on with our teaching. And it's just been amazing since then. And it is type 1 diabetes. It's the insulin dependent. It's the childhood diabetes. They used to call it juvenile diabetes. and it's not the typical one that people get when they're overweight and a little older, usually.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So basically, they didn't know what to think of me because I was in my 30s by then, and they're like, you're too old for juvenile diabetes, but that's what I have. So, and
well, you know,
of course,
this is an interesting thing, and excuse me interrupting but when you're getting juvenile diabetes when you're in your 30s, and this just popped into my mind, I thought, well, she did have an NDE and was born again, so maybe you were more like 10 or 15. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the bottom line is that now there are people that pop in and out that have this. It's not as uncommon as we are all becoming pancreatically challenged in this world.
All
the carbs and everything we're eating. But it was just something that they told me why I had it, because a lot of people say, well, why don't you ask the guys, why do you have it? Well, basically, they told me, and the reason they gave me was that I needed this to keep my attention on the body and keep me in the body, because I have a tendency to go to the other side.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. So exactly what I'm saying.
Why not, you know?
Yes, it's like you come back and you go, daggummit, I'm still fat. No, I'm kidding.
but, you know,
seriously, you come back and you go, okay, you gotta deal with this dense body. You've got to work through the bills, and you have to do whatever it is. But that's all. That's wonderful, though. I mean, for me, it's joyful. But you know what I'm talking about when you're in this buoyant, weightless, spirit-filled, unconditional, loving, whatever place.
Oh, and I felt like a bubble.
Exactly.
Holy
I always talk
shit.
About the bubble. Absolutely. Oh. My little bubble, I get in my bubble and go flying all over the world. Maybe we'll meet up.
Yes, indeed. I think that there's real chances for that. And it's interesting how telepathically mm-hmm. I'll pick up on people just out of the blue. And we do connect. And we, you know, there is this web that exists where people do connect interdimensionally. And that's why these experiences are so important, because we are proving to the world and validating the fact that we are multidimensional. We don't just exist on one plane. In fact, as I keep repeating, the physical plane is nothing but a hologram anyway.
Exactly.
I enjoy playing your colors. You know?
I agree with that, and I keep waiting for the time when we're evolved enough so we can beam ourselves all over the world. We're not conditioned by the human body to be in one little place.
Exactly.
You know, we can shift our atoms around a little bit. Why not? I mean, who would have thought 200 years ago, doing what we do today, which is nothing, cell phones, just regular phones, we're flying, all that. People back in those days were like, oh, yeah, right. They can't conceive it.
So. Well, also, as we are vibrating at a higher frequency through being quickened, mm-hmm. we will be able to do that. You know, beam me up, Scotty, that'll be a regular thing. You know?
I believe that. I definitely believe that. I think it's possible. I don't know when or how, and when we will evolve to that level, but I believe that will eventually be, not in my lifetime, but will be common. I really see us as beings of light, you know, fluttering through even time, different time dimensions.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the guides are always telling me how time is, first of all, it doesn't exist on
it
the other side.
It doesn't exist at all.
Nothing. And that's so hard for the human mind to conceive. It's because we are so linear here on Earth. Everything is, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and morning, noon, and night. And we have to have these limits. But our spirit knows no bounds. And so I know that eventually we'll get to that point where we can eliminate those boundaries, which would be so cool.
Oh, it's really exciting to think about this. And the wonderful work that people like yourself is doing, and all of the wonderful people that I've been connecting with and interviewing, and the wonderful testimonies.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Oh, it is absolutely exciting. And yet, the near-death experience has been happening as long as human beings have existed, but there just hasn't been, I'm going to say, as much documentation in the early days of this. There were hieroglyphs and, you know, little drawings that people might draw on the side of a cave or on a rock or something like that, but there are all kinds throughout history, throughout human life on this planet, there have been near-death experiences, but so many of us didn't find out about the, quote, near-death experience. In fact, I was when I was interviewing Peter Schalke, I said, oh my gosh, I just realized that it was as a result of seeing life after life that I heard about NDEs. And my gosh, these people have been through exactly what I've been through.
Wasn't that exciting when you first met person who had had the same experience? It's like, I was there too, It's just like a wonderful reunion.
It was.
Think because of the internet and the information that we have access to via the internet, I think it has exploded because everybody shares information online.
Oh, and speaking of internet, let's give our listeners your website.
Okay, yes. It's selffulllife.com. It's self as if myself, dash full, like the glass is full, life. Dash life. You don't have to have the dashes, but it helps if you do. It's selffulllife.com.
And so selffulllife.
And I actually do a lot of, I'm on Sirius Satellite Radio. I do their 1 minute, their inspirational spots on Sirius on channel 114, and a lot of those are they're life balancing moments that I come on and I say for 1 minute, and those are based on a lot of the teachings from the guides and from my book. And the other thing that you were talking about, the channeling, I did want to mention that in the book, the last chapter is a question and answer chapter from the guides, and they're just basic, simple questions and answers of more generalized questions that I think a lot of people would be interested in. And the way I'm able to do this sort of thing is one of my guides one evening told me to put my hands on my laptop computer, and because I wanted to bring the teachings from that side to this side. And I can never remember. When I come back, it's almost like I can remember the feeling. I bring the feelings back, but not the words to help teach.
Yeah.
So I put my hands on there, and when I come out of meditation, I read for the first time. There's documented conversation with myself and the guides, and it is amazing. The first time I saw that, I just burst into tears because I recognized the dialogue from when I was on the other side. I don't know what I'm typing. I just have this, put my hands on the computer, and it just comes right through. My guide told me it was laying down the gifts upon the electronic bites.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. And I do readings for people occasionally. It's not something that I like to do all the time. It's not something that I promote. But I have helped a lot of people by doing this, and it's been fun, and people have gotten a lot out of it. And basically, I tell them, it's just going to give you something to think about. Because the guides always say, first of all, you know everything. You already have the information. All they want to do is give you something to think about and possibly grow or find a new challenge or just light a spark under your heart to keep going in life, and whether you believe what is said to you or not. You know, it doesn't even matter.
Well, they help to bring things to the surface that might be sort of buried or that, you know, are so-called conscious mind hasn't really grasped, but on a soul level, we've got all of that intact. And so they help to bring it to the surface, bring it into the open, and we go, aha, all right, this makes sense.
Finally it makes sense. And sometimes things don't make sense when you first read them. How many times have we read a book or whatever or had a reading done, and then we go back and revisit it after a month or two or a year, and we hear things that we never heard before? Because we weren't ready.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my clients will say that to me, too, because I've been giving readings for nearly 40 years now.
Wow.
And, you know, I'll share things with them and encourage them. And I might say something that seems just totally off the wall in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then, lo and behold, they'll report back to me that it ended up being spot on.
Exactly. And not only that, because time isn't linear on the other side, sometimes when you give them information, you don't know if it's, where it's coming from.
Exactly.
So I always tell people when I'm even just speaking with them and talking with them, because I don't consider myself a psychic. I consider myself an intuitive. I definitely am a channeler. But it's not something that I do, that's not my title that I give myself. I basically give myself teacher is what I am, an author and singer.
And that's something else we've got in common. We both sing.
Oh,
and
you sing.
We both do music. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, fabulous. I just did the most fabulous music festival in Santa Barbara. It was called Unity and Diversity, and basically it was all religions, all different kinds of religions, all different people from all different backgrounds and spiritual beliefs coming together, this beautiful, like, 1920s theater in Santa Barbara, California. And we all got to, I got to sing with this big band and the sax, and it was so much fun. And I sang three songs or whatever, and I do a lot of singing live, not a lot, but I do quite a bit of singing live at spiritual centers here. Back in the day, if you recall, when I was telling my NDE, I was performing with my band, and I actually went into, I've done a lot of studio work. So basically that's kind of where I found my niche, live singing and studio work. But when I stepped up on the stage at a spiritual center, there's a beautiful center here in Los Angeles, Agape, in Culver City. And about a year ago, actually, I stepped up on that humongous stage and sang again from a different space. You know, not from, I got to get a record deal, or I've got to impress somebody, and I got to look good while I'm doing it. None of that. It was just joy, and I was hooked all over again with singing in that, from that space, which is so healing, the vibration.
It's interesting that we're both in, I guess, what's considered Music Cities. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, mm-hmm. and I sing and perform. I perform in a choir, and
wanted to come to Nashville for so. If I come to Nashville, we'll have to have coffee.
And that will be so wonderful, and just share more exciting things about the NDEs. And the interesting thing with the music is that I am in it entirely for the love of it, and the the spiritual message that music conveys. In fact, we do a beautiful song called Why We Sing, and one of the lyrics or the bridge is, music builds a bridge, it can tear down a wall. Music is a language that can speak to one and all. And when we're doing the music, I can transmit the energy, the love, the wisdom gleaned from the near-death experiences. And in fact, I tend to channel a bit when I'm playing the piano. I'll just start composing music.
Absolutely.
Music of the spheres, whatever.
I think it raises the vibration of the body. I know, I used to call it singing from the angels. Back before I had my NDE, there were just some evenings where I would be performing and I'd be up on stage and I'd close my eyes and it was effortless. It was simply effortless to sing and to let this come through me. And I used to say, oh, I'm singing from the angels tonight. And now I totally understand that, because that's all I ever do. I don't sing unless I sing from the angels now, you know? And I can remember just touches of it back when. And now it is so healing and so wonderful. And I'm doing a lot of work in guided imagery, and I'm working and collaborating with a wonderful composer to do some guided imagery tapes. And his music is so healing. And it just, every time I do it live, people come up to me and say, who was that musician? You know, this man is just wonderful. So I've got that on my plate as well. So a lot of.
So are you recording a CD with him?
Well, basically what we're doing is, I have a studio I have my own little home studio, which is actually a beautiful studio.
Oh, good for you.
Yes, and it's totally professional studio. Sounds wonderful. Bottom line is that I do a lot of, I actually have.
Sorry about that. We have to close the show down.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Because we have the next host up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being with us this evening, and remember that only love prevails.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.